North Hall Street. Thank you. Without further ado, it's my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, Nick. Let's give it up for Nick.
Hello. I'm Nick, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 3/19/15. So yesterday, by the grace of God and with help from my friends and you all in this room, I celebrated 4 years of sobriety. So to be here today is such an incredible blessing. When I first, I'll share a little bit about what it was like and then, what happened, what it's like now. But when I first got into these rooms, I didn't know what my life would be like. I just know I had nowhere else to go if I wanted to live, if I wanted to avoid the impending health problems that were coming up. I had no idea the incredible feeling it would be like to stand up here with people who share the same problem I do and who also share the same solution. I didn't know what that would be like. I ran into a good friend who took me to one of my first meetings ever when I was walking in here. I wasn't expecting to see him. And it's such an incredible feeling to know that I have good, real friends these days. People who came out, who took time from their evenings to be here. So to say that I'm grateful is an understatement. So 4 years. So I grew up here in Visalia. I went to Golden West High School. I graduated in 1995. And then I got accepted to a university in the Bay Area, Stanford University, and I went there. And I left Visalia, and I was never going to turn back. It was, it was like my ticket out of here. I was able to, go and be myself. With that also came a lot of anxiety, feeling different than, feeling apart from. That's something that I've struggled with is from my earliest memories of feeling like I don't fit in, that, other people are judging me, that, that something's wrong. And when I went to college, as great as it was to, get into a great university and to be on my own, as great as that was, it also came with, these feelings that I didn't really know how to deal with until I found alcohol. And I remember the first time that I took that drink and alcohol started to work for me. It was a frat party. I had tagged along with some friends and I got into the gin. And I started to drink, and all of a sudden, I felt like I fit in. I felt like, I could dance and I could talk to people, and it was great. And it was so great that I don't even remember, I lost count. The next thing I really remember is waking up in the showers of my dorm with my RA trying to coach me to throw up in the bucket, and it was a miserable physical experience, but that first drunk taught me the power of what alcohol could do for me, about how to change the way I feel, how to fit in. And so from that, I became a weekend drinker. We would drink whenever we could get somebody to buy us, the cheap vodka, whenever we could, because everybody was under 21. But we had this foreign exchange student from Singapore who was 21, and he didn't drink. But he would go, and we'd guilt him into buying alcohol for us, and he would. And so my drinking started, differently than other people. So I look back at those times, and I can see how my drinking was different. I wanted to finish that cheap, nasty vodka. And one or two buddies, we'd stay up until it was gone. Our other friends, went to bed. They realized, oh, we're at a university, and we should probably study and get some sleep and other stuff. But I was we're going to finish this because it feels so good. And I'm bonding with other people, and it takes me out of myself. But I got a reputation amongst my friends as being a drinker, and they'd come to me, to plan the parties and progressives, and looking back, that should have been a clue that I was somehow different. And I didn't really, you know, take that to heart, but I did graduate, and I got a job as a stockbroker. So part of that job is taking out clients, entertaining clients, and, you know, happy hour was part of the job description in my mind. It was like, that's what I needed to do to, you know, feel comfortable enough to talk to people and, you know, ask them to give us money or whatever, schmooze people. So that going to happy hours, going to client events, you know, looking back at that now, I drank differently than my coworkers did. I wanted to, you know, once I started drinking, I wanted to stay there till the end. And when everybody else was ready to go home, I was also ready to keep, you know, either drinking at home, going out to another bar, whatever that looked like. You know, and still though, from college till, you know, my early 30s, I was able to keep some sort of semblance of a normal life, being what I look back and saying a functional alcoholic, because I was only drinking, you know, during the weekends, like we read in, you know, in one of the readings, like I was only drinking on the weekends, and it was for, you know, a purpose, and I was having fun with friends, and I did that for a long time, actually. I did that until what really changed for me in my drinking was I met my first real partner, and he, looking back, he was an alcoholic and an addict and, you know, all these other things I could say that I've only recently come to forgive him for, but we bonded. We met at a bar. And so we bonded over drinking. We both liked to drink a lot. I met a drinking buddy, and we eventually decided to move in together very quickly. And I think that's something that, you know, characterized my alcoholism as impulse, you know, just doing things, you know, not thinking about it and doing it when I'm drunk. We moved in together. And very shortly thereafter, the signs of his disease really began to come out. And, you know, a sane person might have thought, you know, oh, I'm going to end this relationship, I'm going to move on, or, you know, but instead, rather, I decided, well, maybe I should just keep up with the drinking. Maybe I'll enjoy the company more. You know, maybe, you know, this is fine. Also, part of my self-esteem was like, this may be the best that I can do. And that relationship and the trauma of that, because we would get into fights, the police would get called, you know, hospital visits, you know, all sorts of bad things. That was what kicked my drinking into overdrive. That's the end of that relationship. I was drinking every day, 7 days a week. It was just, you know, wine, but, you know, I was drinking alcoholically. We bought one of those boxes of wine, which, you know, the wine industry has renamed cask of wine, so you don't feel so bad drinking out of a cask versus a box. But we would finish one of those sometimes at night, and that's three or four bottles of wine, and that's just what we did. And so at this point, looking back, I am definitely an alcoholic. Like that's what I am looking back. And it's only now in my, you know, early 30s that I'm able to, looking back then, I'm 42 now. I'm 41 now. I'm going to be 42 next month. In my early 30s, you know, drinking every day, drinking to soothe my anxiety, drinking to soothe my anxiety over the things that I had done while I was drinking, it was an everyday thing for me. And this has also started, you know, the series of bad decisions that will get me back to Visalia. But what I see from that relationship is like I started to give my power and over to alcohol, that so I could feel good, so I could fit in, so I could have a relationship. And a sane person would have thought that's probably not the way to go about it. As a matter of fact, some of my friends from that era were like, you should get rid of him, you know, you'd be better off. And I only sort of half heard those things, you know, and I wasn't ready then. And by this point too, I realized that other people that I would meet probably didn't drink the way I did. And I was beginning to feel some embarrassment over about drinking every day and drinking until basically I passed out. So that relationship ended, and I'd gone to a good university. I had a great job. I was making six figures. I had houses, cars, and that relationship ended. And because of bad decisions I made, because of, you know, circumstances that I created, I lost all of that. I had to sell two homes. My car got repossessed. You know, I lost my living situation. And my best alcoholic thinking which ended to me, you know, losing my job that I loved, actually. My best alcoholic thinking was that, well, maybe I should get a job as a bartender. And so I approached one of my clients from my job, and I'm like, you know, you have a series of bars, and, you know, maybe I have something that I can do, and, you know, I can help you with this business aspect, and I can do this. And he's like, yeah, that's all great, but why don't you bartend first so that you can learn the business, and then we'll talk about the other things. And so I started as a bartender for these big gay clubs in San Francisco. And so now I was in the center of everything. So I was with me, my disease, and, you know, and basically, you know, working and socializing with other bartenders, many of whom were alcoholic, had their own issues. And that kicked my alcoholism and other stuff into the point now where it starts to get really bad. I cannot pay any of my bills. I can't pay any of my bills. I'm losing my self-respect. I'm isolating from good friends and family that I had, you know, because I probably don't want to hear what they have to say. And, you know, I'm also embarrassed about everything that I had gotten from. So coming from Visalia, doing really hard, being getting into a good university, having a great job, you know, having all this stuff, and then very quickly losing it all. And so I just was isolating. I had lost a lot of my self-respect. And again, alcohol was there to help me feel better and to cover it up. And I sought lower companionship. Something you're going to hear, or you hear in these rooms, is that you start to seek others like you. So I lost the comparison of what my life, you know, should be like, or I lost that comparison, and I was living as an alcoholic bartender in San Francisco, and I thought that was fine. And it was fine until I lost that job because of my drinking. I'm sure, like, my boss never said, you know, it's because of your drinking. He just said, you know, one day there's not really room for you here anymore. And he gave me a small severance check, like $1,500. But looking back on it, it was $1,500, which I thought, this is great. It's Christmas, and I can take that $1,500, and I'm going to go home to my boyfriend at the time. We're going to buy the nice vodka. You know, we're going to celebrate, because now, you know, part of me was like, oh, you know, what am I going to do? You know, what am I going to do now? I just had this job and was barely paying the bills, or actually not. I have this job. What am I going to do next to pay the bills, to keep this relationship? And so I tried a few things. None of those worked out. Thanks to my higher power, none of those worked out. I tried to drive for Uber and Lyft. That didn't work out so well. You need to be sober to drive, it turns out. I tried to I tried to like get odd jobs. I was pouring wine at a fancy wine bar. You know, lost that job too. It was only part-time, so it wasn't a big deal. But and now I'm at a point where I basically have no money. I can't pay the rent. Rent in San Francisco is very expensive. So I was paying $1,500 or $1,300 for a one bedroom in San Francisco. That was a good deal. That was like people were saying, that's a great deal there. I could barely afford that. Forget food. You know, that wasn't my money that I could muster up was going to buy whatever vodka we could, whatever. You know, whatever it would, we'd sort of start to think in conniving ways that we could get more alcohol. Like, we'll invite a buddy over, and he'll bring some. We'll tell him to bring something. And but this is where, you know, for me, I could no longer deny that, you know, something was wrong. This is getting close to my step one of admitting that I'm powerless over alcohol. Is I'm in my apartment in San Francisco. I'm fighting with my boyfriend. And one day he has it with me too. And he's like, you know what? You need to go get help. And when another alcoholic is telling you, you need to get help, you know, it's really bad. It's really bad. And like, at this, I was drinking from the time I got up to the time I went to bed. And if I woke up, I would have a drink by my bedside so I could go back to sleep. And so I went to sort of like this dry out clinic in San Francisco, and this is still hazy in my memory, and I just went there for like 12 hours, and they didn't keep you there, they would let you go, and at some point I'm like, you know what, I'm starting to sober up, they gave me some Ativan, I'm going to go home, I don't want to be here. And so I came back, but it was now this step, so somebody else has told me, you're an alcoholic, you need help. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe I'll try AA. This is probably the summer of 2014. Maybe I'll try AA. So I went to some meetings in San Francisco, and it was weird. You know, it was really weird. The people were weird. They were saying weird things, you know, reciting mantras. I didn't know what it was, and they were telling me that I couldn't drink ever again. And I'm like, okay, I'm not sure this is for me. So I tried a few meetings, mostly to appease other people at the time. Tried a few meetings, and of course, it didn't get any better. And I didn't have any more money. And so I came up with this plan that, or I don't know if I came up with it or my higher power came up with it, but I came up with the plan to come back home to Visalia. Because the only place I had left to go, I was about to lose the apartment in San Francisco. So I, with no plan, I came back. But part of the deal of coming back was that I should go to meetings and I should try and do something. And so, thank God, my mom was like, okay, come back. And, you know, the next day I got back here, I went to a meeting. This was my first meeting. Was a night meeting. Was at there was a meeting at the Red Cross building down here. And actually, Bill was one of the first people that I heard speak in an AA meeting. And I was like, you know, maybe by this point I had stopped drinking for a few days because I was like, okay, well, I can't go home and be all drunk, and I'm not going to have any money to buy stuff, and let me just. And I started to hear things in that meeting that gave me some hope for maybe doing something different, because I was out of hope. I was out of options. And so I went to that meeting from the very next day, and God put somebody in my life. His name's Jim. Jim D, if you might get a bigger guy. And he's friends with my dad, who's also in the program. And my dad was like, hey, can you take my son to some meetings? You know, can you introduce him? And sure enough, true to form of what I've learned in this program is, you know, he was of service to me. He picked me up at like 11:30 every day. We would go to the Alano Club for the noon meeting. He'd take me back. He would talk to me. He introduced me to other people. He introduced me to, you know, some people who would later help me through the steps. And he's one of the person I just saw, and I'm so grateful to see him. So so I came back and I'm, Jim's taking me to meetings. I'm meeting people at the Alano Club. I'm hearing stuff that, you know, as I'm beginning to dry out, as I'm beginning to sober up, I'm hearing stuff that makes a lot of sense. And I'm able to say, yes, you know, I've got what you all have. I'm an alcoholic. And, you know, and then, you know, in doing that and in realizing that in my core, that step one, that I'm powerless over alcohol, my life has definitely become unmanageable. And it's because of alcohol and what it does to me that it doesn't do to other people. There's some people out there who can drink, and I'm not one of them. So I'm starting to hear this in the meetings, and I'm starting to feel good. And it's about this time, like, there's the possibility for me to think about going back to San Francisco. When I got fired from the bar, my boss let me file for unemployment. But because of, I'm actually not sure what, my claim wasn't getting approved yet. They needed something else, and they needed something else, and then they said I owed them some money from the last time, and I'm like, oh God. So I'm like, well, going back to San Francisco probably isn't in the cards for me right now. And then another God shot for me is that me and my boyfriend at the time broke up. So now I had actually no reason to go back. I had no money to go back, no person to go back to. I didn't have a way to pay for any apartment up there. And so my hand was forced to stay here and to continue what I had started, you know, at the Alano Club and with meeting people. And right around this time, too, is when I got introduced to what is my home group today, the Rainbow Group. And I met my sponsor, Reyes, and we started to really talk about the steps. And, you know, and what's really, when I look back, you know, it is the relationships and the friendships and the network that really kept me sober in the beginning. Because I wasn't working any steps in the first couple months. I was hearing them, you know, and I was hearing, but I wasn't working any step besides step one of just having been here and realizing my life is unmanageable. But it's meeting people like Jim and Reyes and the people at the Rainbow Group and people here that I see here. I see a lot of friends. Having that network of people that I was accountable to, people that I started to enjoy being around, people who were fighting the same fight I was at different levels or who had been where I was, that's really what kept me sober in those first days, because I wanted to keep coming back. I came back here with no friends. I had gone to high school here, but that was 20 years ago. I'd come back with no friends, no job, you know. So if I wanted to do anything outside of my home, it was with AA people, really. And we started to have fun. I met people who, you know, would come on to be my best friends today, who, you know, I got to sort of start to work the program with. And that is one, if you're new, one of the things I would say is, you know, you're going to hear, like, obviously, you know, get a sponsor, work the steps, but think about who your network is. You know, what kept me sober was having a new network, getting rid of my old friends, which some of them left anyways because I wasn't drinking. But who are you hanging out with? Are they, you know, are they sober people? Are you still holding on to ideas that, you know, maybe you can drink like a normal person, or maybe you're going to do this for a little bit and then you're going to go back to your old life, or with a new perspective, or with the ability to drink normally, or whatever that looks like? Because I've seen, you know, I've now had the privilege to work with some people, and I've seen and to see people come in and out of these rooms, and if people still are talking to their old friends, their old buddies, they're still holding on to some reservation that they can, you know, they can be of the world and drink and do other stuff. They're holding on to that. It does not bode well for them. And I am lucky that I came back with nothing and no one to Visalia, because I had to build it all back with sober people and with my family, who, with the exception of my dad, are all normal drinkers. So, how much time do I have? Oh, great. So I came back. I'm starting to get this program. I'm meeting people. I have a sober network, and I start to work the steps. So step one was, you know, for me, writing down the ways of all my life was unmanageable. And beyond the things that I rambled on about, there's like a 2 pages more of the way my life was unmanageable. And then turning my will and my life over to a higher power, that is where I really found what's kept me sober from just the social aspect of this program. And I remember very clearly, and I've shared this here 2 years ago, and I've shared it in other meetings, and I'll share it again, because I remember very clearly I was on step three, and I had done the work, and I was talking with Reyes outside the Starbucks on South Mooney by Target. And I remember it very clearly. I remember it like there's a storm coming in, but it's still sunny where we're at. And we're sitting and we're talking about, you know, step three. And it wasn't, I can only say that it was, you know how they talk about in the book about the spiritual experience, there's the kind that's education, there's the kind that's like a white light. Well, mine was somewhere in the middle. So it was the feeling that somehow my life could be fine without alcohol, without this you know, magical elixir that I'd come to rely on for everything in my life. I could be somehow fine. I started to have hope for the future of rebuilding new things. And it was after that, it was just a few moments, but it was after that that I felt that I could be separated from alcohol for the rest of my life, and I was going to be okay, and I was going to be happy about it. And for somebody who drank like I did for as long as I drank, you know, that was a miracle. Because before that moment, you know, it was a thought in my mind, and every time I passed a bar, you know, when I walked down the liquor aisle, which I don't recommend doing if you're new, but, you know, or I would see people having fun, you know, drinking or at a family party, it was still a thought. Like, I felt like something was missing, and I felt bad about it. Like, gosh, I wish I could do that. After that moment in October 2015, after that moment, I felt a psychic change. I was able to see alcohol or see people having fun. The big test is I was able to go back and visit San Francisco for a weekend, and I passed my old haunts in the Castro. And I passed by them, and they did no longer, they called to me to go inside to drink, which was incredible, because I would, I would never have done that in the past. I'd stop at every bar along the way and say hi to my friends, and I was actually able to go inside, because one of my friends was bartending, and I was able to go inside and have a soda water, and have a decent time. You know, I also realized that, okay, after about half an hour, this place was boring, and it no longer was, you know, I didn't see how I used to spend 4 hours there plus a night, but you know, that's another thing that I've learned is you can go as alcoholics, if we're spiritually fit, if we're in a good place, if we're doing what we need to, we can go to bars or places where maybe there's something going on. If you have a purpose, if you have a reason for being there too. Like, so after step three, you know, like, okay, well, this is good. So somehow, I don't know how it was, but I stalled on my step work. I'm like, okay, I'm good. I got this God thing, the spirit thing. And I was like, oh, step four, step five, that sounds like a lot of work. And it's a lot of self-reflection. And, you know, I'm good now. And I'm starting to also work again. I'm getting some of the things back that I had lost. And so, but again, my higher power coming back into or giving me a nudge in my life, somebody, a newcomer, came into the program, and I don't even really remember how, but he asked me to be a sponsor. I was one of the first people that he met, and, you know, and I started to see, like, when they talk about in the book that working with others, nothing so much ensures, you know, our sobriety is working with others. I started to see that, and I started to get the impulse that this is something that I needed to do and to give back to the program, too, not just to be an AA taker. And so I talked to Reyes, and I'm like, well, can I sponsor him? And he like, well, you need to get up to, you know, 7-8 first. And so that encouraged me to start to take those next steps after some, I forget how long it was that I was sort of stalled, to take those next steps and to do that inventory and to talk to another person and to, you know, realize what my character defects are and then ask for those defects to be removed. It's a difficult process to realize that, you know, I'm not perfect, that, you know, I've been a liar, a cheat, a thief, I've done things to people that, you know, I regret. So, and then let me talk really quick about, you know, making amends. So that's one that I still work on. There's many people there's a list of people in San Francisco that I need to make an amends to. One of them is my last roommate in that area, that poor guy. I owe him some amends for some of the things I did. I sold some of his shirts to the secondhand store for vodka money. There's a list of things that I still need to make some time when I, you know, get back up to the city again. I haven't been up there in 2 years. And there's probably, it's an amends I want to make in person to him. So, but even in, when I've gone to somebody and I've said, I did this, I was wrong, how can I make it better? There's the ninth step promises that, you know, we're going to, that we read. Those, I felt freedom. And it, like, it makes me want to do that some more. But it's going to somebody and saying that, you know, I wronged them, and worse, what can I do to make it better? Because they could say anything, you know. But doing that has been very powerful for me. So I started to work with somebody, and I started to see him get better through this process. And it's such an amazing feeling to work with somebody who gets it. Because I've also, since then, worked with people who were holding on to old ideas, who weren't ready, who were being forced to be here by their parents or by somebody. You know, and it's sad when they go out. It's sad, and there's, you know, it's only been a few people, but to see them not make it, to see them, it's like watching. I see what they are doing that isn't helping their situation, and, you know, I can only offer suggestions. I can't have them take it. And it's you know, and what's waiting for a true alcoholic is death, jails, institutions, hospitals. That's what's waiting. And I look back and how I narrowly avoided that. Like, there's a part in the book that talks about they just stopped in time. That's not quite my story. I'd lost a lot and my health started to fade. But I stopped right before I started to have to be in the hospital, or I was going to end up in jail. I was going to end up hurting somebody, you know. And those, I mean, what I hear in meetings is those are still yes for me if I were to decide to stop doing what I'm doing every day. So I want to use my remaining time to talk about what my program's like today, what's keeping me sober on a daily basis. I had already mentioned the idea of my social network. So I am blessed that everybody, all of my coworkers, my closest friends, my fiance, you know, the people that I associate with, they're all in the program. And that's probably something that my higher power knows that I needed and probably still need today, because it keeps me from even entertaining ideas of what do I do after a hard day? What do I do when I'm really stressed out? You know, now there's other things I do, like I eat too much. You know, the last time I was on the stage, I was 20 pounds lighter. You know, but there's things that I do today to soothe myself that aren't alcohol or drugs. You know, I still start off with a quick prayer in the morning. I still catch myself in the middle of the day taking a moment to reflect. The other day, you know, I had to go and tell somebody that, you know, I had to go and make a mini amends to somebody. And there's things that I do so that resentments, bad feelings, anxieties don't build up. And I have, like I was talking about, I have this network of people that I can talk to, who I see working on the same things that I'm working on day in, day out. And I go to meetings regularly. I go to meetings and I hear stories that remind me of where I came from, because it's really easy for me today to forget where I was. You know, even just like talking about this right now, it's really easy to forget that I was about to be, you know, homeless on the street with no money. And today, you know, I have a job. I get to do work that I love. I have my self-respect back. I have the respect of my parents back. I get to, tomorrow, I'm going to be presenting with my best friend who's also in the program. We're going to be presenting at the Visalia Chamber of Commerce Leadership Conference on, you know, on a topic. Somebody, you know, after all of this mess and trauma in my life, somebody values enough what we have to say, and we've done this work to, you know, to ask me to go and speak at something like that. People value my opinion again. I can look in the mirror, I can pass the mirror, and I can be okay with what I see. When I, 4 years ago, when I got in here, I would not look in the mirror. I didn't like who I saw, I didn't like the way I looked. And today, I have that ability to look and say, okay, this person's okay. You know, I honor my past. Like it says, we don't shut the door on our past. I don't want to repeat it. But I'm able to look and see how everything that, you know, from that time that I was young and started to drink to now, how God has got me to this place where I needed to be. I needed to go through that experience. I needed to be constantly, you know, slapped on the head and say, no, this life, this living in San Francisco, all of these things are not what's going to help you. And then to be removed from that situation, not have the opportunity to go back to it. You know, I really quick, when as soon as I made that decision not to return to San Francisco, my unemployment kicked in, which was amazing, because now I was, you know, settled in remaining here, and I had some money. So like, wow, this is, you know, I've been able to see the way that my higher power has worked in my life for my benefit, even when it didn't seem like it was for my benefit. Even when I was bitter that I couldn't drink, that I lost everything, that I had, you know, bad relationships and friends, and been able to see how my higher powers got to me through that. I've been able to see how those things were things that I contributed to. And so I get to be here tonight with you all, one of the last speakers here in the Creative Center, which is, you know, St. Paul's is really nice too. That's Young People's, happens on the same night, and that's one of my core meetings. You'll like it there. But I get to be here with you all, and I get to, you know, share my experience, strength, and hope of 4 years of not having alcohol, which, again, for somebody who is like me, it's a miracle. I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you for letting me be here and share this moment with you. And with that, God bless you all. I'm Nick. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you.